From the front line.
It's not going to work, man.
From the tailgates. Representing KTYR and its stakeholders, we are the Forum for the Fan, the Bleed Blue Show. Flying solo, here's your host, Steve.
Yeah, we are the Forum. This is the Knickerbocker Avenue Fan Forum on the Bleed Blue Show. Talking to Nick Sinners tonight, Enos Cancer over to Noah. And our pick two with our two teams this week, looking into the Phoenix Suns and the Washington Wizards. BleedBlueShow.com is our website. Audio archive episodes, of course, on iTunes, Podcast Republic, TuneIn, and your Stitcher apps. Of course, on the sports audio library of BleedBlueShow.com. Go to the podcast tab. Before we get into all that stuff, first of all, just on the Yankee tip, very, 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 very disappointing performance by Sonny Gray today. And, you know, I couldn't wait to talk about this. That episode will be on Monday, talking Yankees baseball. But what an atrocious performance by Sonny Gray today. You have to beat Baltimore the way they're looking. They pretty much gutted the heart of their team. They are truly rebuilding. And just on the Yankees, too, it was just really disappointing watching that game today at the Bronx. So, I mean, now they got a four-game series in Boston. And we'll pick up on that episode on the Bleed Blue Show. We will pick up on that on the dugout on Monday. I just wanted to get that off my chest because I know a lot of the stakeholders, for the most part, mostly are Yankee fans. Whether they are engaged to this podcast, the Knickerbocker Avenue Fan Forum, or not, but I just wanted to know. We had a good episode with Jimmy talking baseball on Monday, so check that out as well. On Tuesday, we talked Kevin Hazen and Ryan Spooner, and we also talked a little bit of Vancouver Canucks and Carolina Hurricanes on the Rink Podcast with Ranger Proud. Shout out to RP. That episode as well in the archives. And, of course, on Thursday, matter of fact, the Hall of Fame game is right around the corner. I think that's tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken, man. And football season's kind of crept up. I live in a sports bubble, man. I mean, these things just come up so fast. I know for a lot of people who are just truly engaged to the NFL, or if that's your only sport, it's football, whether it's college football or in the NFL, you waited all summer long. Myself, man, it just comes by fast when you're into the baseball, you're into the other sports. It's just a revolving, rounding thing with just talking sports. But regardless, excellent episode with Chris and the stakeholders on the Big Blue Roundtable last Thursday talking training camp, the start of training camp last week. And we will resume training camp talk and as well as the Hall of Fame game on Thursday and talking giant wide receivers on Thursday on the Big Blue Roundtable or Frontline Radio podcast. So this week we're talking Nick Sinners, Enos Cancer, Jakeem Noah. A little bit later we'll talk about what these guys, the stakeholders' thoughts on the Phoenix Suns roster and, of course, the Washington Wizards on our pick two on the NBA around the league. So without further ado, let's bring on the man himself on, a fellow Yankee fan, the source for the streets for our New York Knicks. That will be Knickerbocker Avenue. Knickerbocker Avenue could be all, like I said, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, talking Enos Cancer, talking Knicks. If you guys have anything to say about our Yankees, I'm pretty sure he's down as we get into the four-game series in Boston, but that's on the baseball tip of Avenue. What's up, man? How's everything?
Dude. I was prepared to talk next, stay professional, get myself ready, you know, to do NBA talk, and then you have to bring up Sonny Gray, crazy ass, and then you got me drinking again. I'm sorry, but I remember when we made the when people were so gung-ho about making that trade last season to bring Sonny Gray over. Didn't have a great start to introduction to the Yankees because he wasn't getting any run support. He still isn't getting run support, but then at the same time now he gets clocked. So now there's really no valid excuse as to what is Sonny Gray's biggest problem. I don't know whether he just can't, if he's just another Carl Pavano, Jared Wright kind of deal, but it just does not work for me, thus far. I mean, he's a great pitcher. He can be a great effective portion to this pitching staff. But Jesus Christ,
it's like
he has to learn how to turn it on and be consistent. And he hasn't quite figured that out in the Bronx. I mean, he started to have a good, good run, and then all of a sudden he gets walloped by Baltimore. I mean, it's one thing if you get walloped like the Red Sox. I can even forgive you if you get walloped by the Blue Jays or anybody else in the American League, that had something formidable to bring. But like you said, the Baltimore Orioles started to gut their team.
They did.
And they walloped him like the way they did. That shows you that Sonny Gray just doesn't bring it when he's supposed to, which is every fifth day. And
right.
That's what bothers me about him.
That was very, very disturbing to watch, man. Especially if we're talking division and you're trying to catch the
right
team ahead of you that's up by six games, man. These are gimme games. These are gimme games. But that's on the baseball team. I couldn't wait till Monday to discuss it. I started to bring it up on your podcast. But
no.
Go ahead.
You already know. I'll debate anything that I can. If somebody could brings it up to me or wants my opinion on something, whatever it is, if I can give you an opinion, I'll give it to you. The Yankee talk is always welcome, and even Giant talk is welcome. Hell, if RP wanted to come on today because he has something he got off his chest, hey, dude, Frank, whenever you want, come on down, brother.
I'm pretty sure they had a lot to discuss after their game yesterday.
Ooh, exactly,
man.
Exactly. And
hey, talking about the Metropolitans.
Oh, the good old amazings of Flushing, Queens. That just can't. They could. I mean, I understand. And remember last week yourself, me, and RP were actually sitting down and talking about it. The Mets could get a lot for DeGrom and Thor. They could get a lot if you get the right bidder. And the realistic bidder that would have been there would have been the Yankees. And it would have made a lot of freaking sense because, hell, there's always that possibility you can always get them back on, down towards the tail end of any contract they get into. But, I mean, come on. The fact that they didn't take advantage of getting a lot of quality assets from the farm, because their farm is horrible. They have the 29th to 30th worst farm system of anyone in all of Major League Baseball. They really need a lot of work, and it's a shame because we're not Mets fans, but we know we're very cognizant of what's going on across town, and we would love it. Most Yankee fans would agree they would love it if the Mets were to be somewhat competitive and somewhat, on par with us, so that way it could be fun for the city. Because sports is just more fun when when your adversary is, somewhat on par, and you can, if it's lopsided, of course, few exceptions apply. Cowboys, Red Sox, that doesn't matter. I mean, you like it lopsided, but on the flip side, the Mets are not really a rival, so why not?
Right. All right, Knickerbocker Avenue, weighing in on the Yankees and also the Mets. And, of course, we're going to get into some next. Let's bring on other stakeholders and welcome them into the conversation, into the dialogue. Donardo DP on Twitter and, of course, on Instagram. Dominic, what's going on? If you have anything you want to weigh on Gray as well, before we get into the Knicks with the Knicks centers and Ken Serenoa. Welcome back to the Knickerbocker Avenue Fan Forum.
Good evening, fellas. Knickerbocker Avenue.
Good evening.
Hey, You know what, Steve? Of all teams, I try my hardest not to bash a Yankee. Maybe it's the Bronx thing in me. But Sonny Gray, I can't defend him no more, man. Here's the funny thing I saw this week in sports. Sonny Gray, who I totally went off the boat with, and then I happened to catch an interview with Barkley from the Giants. And all I was thinking about was you guys. I was like, if they can't fall in love with this kid, then I'm missing something here. Again, Steve, I'm not a big football fan. Me and you had this conversation of how I feel about my city. Though I'm a Jets fan, I never root against the Giants. Like Knickerbocker Ave said, I'm not a Mets fan, but I don't root against the Mets. It's sad to see what they've become, because it wasn't that long ago they was in the World Series. And it's just like they just went totally... I don't know what happened. I swear. And you know what? I know a lot of people get upset at the trading deadline in baseball. But I kept looking. And I was thinking Archer, the pitcher. I was thinking mm-hmm. him. And the other possibly available players, I'm thinking, you know, what are we going to give up for them? You know, we're pretty good in the infield. So who was we going to get to play the infield? Okay, can we get a spare part to play the outfield until Judge comes back? Really? Well, look at that option. Judge goes down and we put Stanton in right field. I mean, or whatever. The trade deadline didn't really, you know, stir my juices because I knew what the Yankees had. And this isn't a last year, a this year thing. This is a long-term thing. Again, Steve, me and you had this conversation. This isn't a flash in the pan thing. So to upset what you got either on the team or in the minor leagues for a long-term plan that we already have set, to me, would have been a waste. So I looked at Archer, a right-handed pitcher, you know, especially in Fenway. All right, you know, that would have been all right with me as long as we didn't have to give up the farm for him. And then, you know what? At the end of the day, I like this Archer kid.
You probably would have to. I think you would have to. That's the reason why it didn't happen. I think, well, not to cut you off, but the Archer thing,
no.
They probably would have had to touch one of those prospects the Yankees didn't want to get rid of, just to put that in there.
Yeah. I mean, but then again, like I said, Steve, he was the only one
yeah.
I would even had any kind of feelings about, you know, if the Yankees are going to go get somebody. They shored up their bullpen. And you know what? Here's the funny thing when I hear people going off the reservation. Still got the second best record in baseball. Still 30 games above 500. And we act like, you know, it's the end of the world. This is that show me now mentality we have. Me, I don't look at it that way because I know the way they're kept, as long as they keep Didi after this year, this is going to be a very good long-term project. I mean, you look at the – other than Gardner – and guess what? Where would the Yankees be without Aaron Hicks? I mentioned this a couple of months ago. Where would they be without Hicks? Has anybody seen Ellsbury? Is he on a milk carton or something? I mean, I really personally don't care where he's at. I'm just saying, you know, Hicks was a throw-in. Oh, you know, in case we need a...
Hey, Dom, to be honest with you, I forgot Ellsbury was even on our team anymore. I forgot.
Exactly.
To me, I have not seen this dude and hired no hair of him all season.
I mean, you know what? Like I said, Hicks was the throw-in. And now all of a sudden, I kept thinking about this a couple of months ago, maybe a month ago. You know, when I seen this guy in a slump, that guy in a slump. And I'm still seeing Aaron Hicks, who was, again, a throw-in. Hey, we could fill him in when somebody gets hurt, you know, spell somebody for a day.
He's every day now.
He's become, you know, the glue.
I give it to you. He's a poor man's Bernie Williams to a T. That's what
he is. Man. You know, he does every. He's one of those people that you hear somebody say, I don't know a lot, but I know a little about a lot. He does a little lot, but very well. He's a great plug-in, but. You know, I guess we'll talk about the Knicks, you know, Cantor and Noah. I don't know. I like Cantor.
Yeah, we're
I'm going to put that out there.
Yeah, let's talk about that. What's your thoughts on Cantor?
Yeah, I'm going to put that out there. I'm going to put that out there right now. I like Cantor. I like his bravado. I like his cockiness. You know, we'll hear everybody say, well, he could, you know, score down low. He's a good, great foul shooter for his size, a good percentage shooter. But then we'll hear everybody say, well, his defense. Again, we went over this last week. The NBA is an offensive-driven league. Points are up. You know, I'm not going to bash him because he's not, you know, Wilt Chamberlain, Willis Reed. No, I just like the way he acts, man. It might be a show, but then again, he plays in New York. You know, don't we all enjoy a show every now and then? You get that one cocky dude. As far as Noah... I mean, you know what, guys? We might as well come to grips. He's going to be on the team. So if they could find something for him to do, you know, spell Cantor, you know, give us a little bit of this, a little bit of that, you know, that's what he's become. And you look back, we had this conversation last year. The wheels started coming off of him a few years ago. Matter of fact, the wheels started coming off of him before the Knicks got him, and I think that's why we were so upset. that they went and signed him. You know, he don't have astronomical numbers. He was a hard-nosed player, good passer. But you know what? If they could just find him 10 to 12 minutes a night maybe to spell Cantor, maybe, you know, help mold that young kid. What's his name? Robinson? The tall guy. Robinson, right? If he could, like, mentor him between him and Cantor, see what we got in this guy. But I'll tell you what, guys, I ain't got no heartache with Cantor. I know people don't like him and they'll go to his defense. But if I'm not mistaken, he damn near averaged a double-double last year. I mean, what more do we want from this guy? I mean, he was on a team that probably won 5 games, didn't have a meaningful game after January. So he's a good plug-in. Are the Knicks going to keep him after next year? Probably not, unless he takes a hometown discount, depending on how this kid Robinson comes along. Because I'm not putting my eggs in a free agent basket next year. Because we go through this every year. This guy's coming. That guy's coming. You know what? We go to war with what we got. So, I like Cantor. He'll be fun for 82 games, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm. And Ab, what's your thoughts on Cantor and Noah? And then I'll chime in.
Enes Kanter, I'm going to echo a little bit of the same thing that Dom just said. Enes Kanter, you know, you love his personality, you love his, you love his effort more or less. I mean, most nights you love how he kind of like, you know, rallies the fans. He's that, you know, that rah-rah, sis kumbaya, you know, kind of guy. Something similar to what Noah used to be in Chicago. And then you got Joakim Noah, who's a $72 million money hole that, you know, that just has nothing to contribute other than experience and, you know, some effective practice time. You know, between those two guys, I mean, yes, this is an offensive-driven league, but unfortunately, because of Enes Kanter's lack of defensive prowess, you see him in foul trouble. You see him constantly missing quality minutes, especially during crunch time and close games, because he's a defensive liability. So his offense is pretty much then nulled. Joakim Noah, I mean, he's not even a shell of his former self. So you're really just thinking about, you know, Enes Kanter giving you the first half of the game, and then hopefully, you know, the bench like Mitchell Robinson and so forth, and you know, a lot of the other young guys out there can fill in at the five a lot more, until Porzingis gets back, and then Porzingis can now, you know, slide into that 4-5, and that's kind of really about it. I mean, we have a huge deficiency on five, even though we did draft Robinson. I don't think that he's more than a, you know, he's quite ready to assume the throne, even once Cantor's contract does run out. So it will be interesting. And then also what would be interesting is, you know, maybe Enes Kanter is not somebody that actually, you know, he might start the season with the Knicks, but it doesn't necessarily mean he'll finish the season with the Knicks. I mean, I can possibly see him getting traded by February, you know, to a contending team, to a team that's about to, you know, on the cusp of making the playoffs, you know, for like a midseason rental since he's an expiring contract. But, you know, that's pretty much the show of it. We have a really big hole at, you know, at the five position now, even more, especially with the fact that Porzingis is still out and probably will be out most of the season.
You said we have a hole at the five position? I thought Kansas is still on the team.
He is on the team, but I think we have I still think we have a huge hole in the five. Because Kanter's still on the team, and yes, he's offensive, yeah. but he can't play quality crucial minutes in crunch time, because he's such a huge defensive liability. Hornacek didn't do it, and that was something that, you know, that was evident. I mean, it's not saying that he never played. He played maybe one or two games, you know, in those situations. But most of the time, what was Hornacek doing? He was subbing him out, putting in Lance Thomas, keeping Kyle O'Quinn out there, and that's pretty much his rotation out. You figure with Porzingis out that Enes Kanter would see more crunch time minutes. He didn't see that much. He didn't see an increase, and he didn't really see much of a decrease in his minutes. They were pretty much the same stagnant base. Yes, he averages a double-double, but because of his defense, he becomes a problem. that's why I think that because of his ability to be off, you know, offensive minded, he's good off the glass, and it could be somewhat of a deterrent, and you know, of a shot blocking tip. I see Enes Kanter quite possibly being traded before the February deadline.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
To a contending team.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. There's nothing you both guys said that is not true. I mean, I totally agree where both of you guys are coming from. I kind of look at the bright side, Dom, and Dom, you kind of said it as far as Enes Kanter he brought a dimension to the Knicks in the sense of it's been a while since we had somebody at a 4 or 5 getting easy shots. He shot very well from the field because several years, the guys at that position – maybe I can't think of the last time that shot was like almost close to 60%. Because Enes Kanter is kind of like on the offensive side. He's going to go to the limb. He's going to get you easy layups. That's his thing. Easy layups, easy cheat layups. So we see a lot of that with Enes Kanter getting, I would say garbage points, but moving without the ball in the paint, around the dotted line, cheap layups, soft touch in a sense. I don't know, man. I just feel like I get it a little appreciative there because there was really no other option outside of that or outside of him after the Carmelo Anthony trade. Now, going back to him business-wise, I think he made the right decision. I don't think he was going to find more money in the open market if he opted out. I think by him sticking with the team, he knew that was his best chance to get at this salary at this point of his career. So I understand that. And Av's right about defense. He's definitely – a defensive liability, but I didn't really see it in the sense of the way Av is saying it. In the sense of, I thought the Knicks went small. Let's put it like this: the Knicks were out of a lot of games by the time the fourth quarter came. Okay, so we all talked about it on the post games for many a times that the Knicks, when it got after halftime, the third quarters came. It was a totally different team out of that locker room. They get blown out. The game was pretty much over. In the games they were in it, let's say the few games they were in it, I thought it was because Enes Kanter was a defensive liability. I think Hornacek was trying to match up against the other team. So if another team went small, they wanted to go small, not necessarily because he was a defensive liability. I think they were trying to match up. If a guy, they threw in a 6'8", 6'9", guy at center, a small forward, a power forward playing center, it would have been a match of nightmare. I mean, you could say it's defense at the end of the day, but I thought it was more so about matching size with size. So they would go with O'Quinn down the stretch, maybe at the five if he didn't start the fourth quarter and end in the third. They'll throw in the Lance Thomas, guys like that. The other intangibles as far as attitude, he brings a personality. I think that is who he is. I think that's what he brought to the table. And we all know about his standing up for Frank Ntilikina against LeBron James. Defensively, he is what he is. He's not going to wow you. He's not a shot blocker or even a shot changer. But he is a walking double-double. And I can still appreciate that and even in today's NBA. I mean, if you're going to be 6'11", 250, whatever his size is, his frame, I mean, at least he's bringing that to the table. He's giving you good he's giving you good shot selection. He's not really the best of jumpers, you know, 8-9 feet out, but he can still hit if it wasn't called upon. But his thing is more back into it. You know, he plays to his back to the basket, and he's going to do the jump hook kind of thing or go up and under for a layup unless if it doesn't get blocked. Now, on the sense of Joakim Noah, you know, I think this was one of those weird situations. I think we've talked about this a couple of times in the past. I don't think he has a lot left in the tank, but I think games like we saw in New Orleans last year is a vital example of how a role Noah could play. When I say that is Anthony Davis was busting the Knicks' ass. He was busting, as a matter of fact, Kristaps Porzingis' ass in that game. They could not stop him in that game versus the Pelicans on the road. Hornacek throws in Noah, and he slows Anthony Davis down. Didn't stop him, but he slows him down. Had a block shot, a dunk. He gets you cheap baskets. His issue last year was with that head coach of last year. And I think how Noah's attitude is going into camp next year with Fizdale, going to be opportunity maybe to groom a Mitchell Robinson or just even get a couple cheap minutes off the bench and just give you that hustle, man, just that, you know, come in the game. Because, you know, Noah doesn't cheat you with lack of play or hard work. So if he's in there for 4 minutes, 5 minutes at a time, he's going to try to get you a couple of rebounds in that. He'll draw a couple of fouls, and that's kind of what you all you can do. And I think I'm with Ab with both of these guys. Now that we're leaning to the future, it's about grooming Mitchell Robinson. It's about grooming other guys on the team because they want to go athletic. I don't look at Cantor or Noah as athletic guys. Noah is kind of more on the physical injured side, and Cantor is more of your traditional back to your basket kind of guy. And I think the Knicks want to go up and down. What I say all this is to say, and I agree with Av, is showcase both of them, meaning give them valuable minutes so a team may want to intrigue in the trade for both of those guys, so you could get both those contracts off the books. And that's, you're talking about $38 million of cap space right there alone. So that's a max guy and a half you're talking about if you're even trying to entertain on bringing in another guy. I mean, if they do play well, they one of them might come back at a value deal. You never know. But I don't count on that. So if you don't think you're going to be able to keep them, I think the best thing for the Knicks is to play them both, and play them as much as they can until they break down. So you can trade them away. And it's just business, baby, just business. Now I want to go back to Dominic. Dom, what is your – like? How do you feel as far as the locker room fit? I think you kind of touched up on it, if you could expand a little bit more. I'm talking about for both of those guys. And it's kind of hard to say without actually seeing it, but I really believe that the situation with Noah – I think we all can agree – was at that practice stuff with Hornacek. So it's kind of a new head coach, new type of head deal. And Noah's kind of on his last legs before he moves on to another team or retires. So what any additional thoughts on Cantor and Noah?
They're both, so it seems. I mean, we're not in the locker room. It seems like they're good teammates. Again, you know, Cantor with the upbeat. The funny thing, and you touched on it, Steve, we talk about him not playing in the fourth quarters. We bashed Hornacek all year with his this and that. But I go back to the beginning of the season, and the Knicks were playing good ball. And then all of a sudden, Cantor missed those few games. And then they all of a sudden went south for a minute because they was missing that double-double, them offensive rebounds. You know what? I brought this up last year. He averaged just as many offensive rebounds as Porzingis averaged rebounds when Porzingis was playing. And when we talk about a defensive liability, other than Porzingis being an off-ball defender, he's a defensive liability. But again, I don't put a lot of stock in that because it is what it is, you know. I don't know who's the one that cracked the joke. Was it Jabari Parker? They don't pay people in the NBA to stop people. They pay people to score. So this is the new, you know, this is the new NBA mentality. But I think they both could fit. The only thing I disagree with you guys is I think the Knicks are going to run this gauntlet because I think they're going to do a lot better than many expect. We could go back into the boogeyman is gone from the East. The East is still the East. So even if you put your best foot forward and maintain and stay at a level until Porzingis comes back, and hopefully these young kids can get in a groove, you never know what might happen. They might just run this to the gauntlet, not move nobody. Maybe we'll be in the position to pick up an expiring contract, get rid of, you know, Courtney Lee, who everybody's been wanting to get rid of for 3 years now. But, you know, we may be in a position where we could do something. And I'm just looking at this season, you know, very optimistically, because you look at the Celtics with the rabbits they keep pulling out their hat. Great young team, but Kyrie Irving is sometimes a liability. You don't know if he's going to play every year. I think the last time he played a whole season was his senior year in high school. So that's always out there. And you look around and, I mean, come on, guys. The Wizards brought Dwight Howard in, and we're sitting here talking about Cantor. And Dwight Howard probably had one of his best years last year, just like Cantor. You know, so it's a yin and a yang, guys. I hope they shock a lot of us. And I hope we're actually around where we're not making no bonehead decisions, having a yard sale, that we're finally, you know, enjoying ourselves in January, February, March. That's all I want to see. I hope they both stay. They can both add something. And again, if we're grooming, then why can't we groom and show these young kids that we're grooming that, hey, it's still about winning. You know, it's still about winning. You're not getting better by getting worse. So they could both be good assets, especially Cantor. I mean, come on, guys. He's going to give you all that. Probably one of the best offensive rebounders we've seen on the Knicks in quite some time. Say what you want about his defense. But like I said, last I checked last year, he was averaging as many or more offensive rebounds than Porzingis was averaging rebounds. And Porzingis is 7'3". So, yeah, I like him, and I know he's going to keep guys upbeat. You know that. He's going to keep everybody upbeat, try to keep everybody's heads in the game. And let's see where that goes. Noah, like I said, if he can give us 10 minutes, 12 minutes, that's more than I think anybody would have expected. And like you said, Steve, new coach, new system. Let's see. You know, everybody deserves a second chance. I don't know which chance Noah's up to now, but hey, you know, let's see what, again, like I said last week, guys, no more talking. Now it's time for Fizdale to show us what he's going to do and what he's going to produce with this roster that we have. And maybe Noah's a part of it. Again, if 10 minutes to 12 minutes a game, I'm for it.
Mm-hmm. And have you heard our thoughts and you heard yourself? And then before we bring on Dre, any additional thoughts on Cantor and Noah? Knickerbocker Avenue.
My bad. My bad. I put myself on mute. All right. The last, you know, final thing on Cantor and Noah is that really they have to show some. They have to show some kind of improvement and something, you know, because it's not necessarily for the Knicks. I mean, yes, it'll benefit the Knicks, but they really have to show themselves out a little bit because the Knicks can really consider waiving that final bit of that $17 million contract next season, and Noah would be out of a job. Cantor has an expiring contract, so he's going to be looking to go elsewhere unless this is his last run. Both these guys should have in their mentality that they have something to prove in order to show another team that they have something to contribute and something that they can, you know, they can utilize, you know, for at least a year or two. If not, this could be, you know, maybe not for Cantor so much, but at least for Joakim Noah. This should be like, you know, unless this is his final contract, you know, and he's calling it quits, he should really consider, you know, really showing out, being a good quality member of this team, and you know, a good contributing factor of it, or it's a career for him, and he's just going to walk away with $17 million of Phil Jackson's given James Dolan money.
Hold on, let me ask you: so you don't think he was a contributing?
I'm sorry, what?
Do you think he was a contributing factor?
I think in that first year he was somewhat contributing. But ever since Phil Jackson's meddling, you know, really got in the way, and it became just, you know, an injury after injury, and then situation after situation. I think after that is when you started to see, the stickity and not so much the actual Joakim Noah, you know, the same kid from Florida State, you know, and really became the defensive player of the year in Chicago, given. Everybody, you know, deteriorates in time, but you really started to see like less and less of what Joakim Noah is possibly. That's why I don't think he's even a former shell of his former self. He's just a dude that kind of looks like the old Joakim Noah and is collecting $17 million extra on top of it. But I mean, like I said, this is put up a show time. Cantor, you know, is going to want a big, you know, he's going to probably be looking for a big contract, and he needs to contribute. Like, he can still give one. And then Joakim Noah, unless his deal is that he's planning to retire, he should really heavily consider, you know, really becoming a contributing factor this season, because the Knicks, you know, can quite possibly, you know, at that point either trade him because he's an expiring deal, or just flat out waive him.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get Dre's thoughts. Bring on Dre, little Dre to the rack on Instagram. We're talking Eden's cancer, Jakeem Noah, and we'll get your thoughts on that. And then before we move on with the Phoenix Suns and the Washington Wizards and our thoughts on those squads for our pick two. But Dre, what's up, man? Welcome back to the Knickerbocker Avenue Fan Forum.
What's up, everybody?
What's going on, man?
But with cancer, I think we're going to get exactly what I want to send him. He's obviously going to get a double-double in terms of defense. I don't think he can improve that much. But I think he'll go ahead and serve his purpose. But I just can't see him come back in a long-term deal. Now, with Jokic, you know, the player wasn't bad. It was the contract. And I think even with all that happened this year, in the beginning of when we first got him, he was actually contributing really good in limited role. But then now it's like, when they push back on more of him seeing the comments, like, wow, since he got the contract, he shouldn't be able to play. Like, yes, it's a bad contract, but at the same time, you might as well get with you, might as well get with you as little as you can. Even though it's little, you might as well try to get something from him. I'm not like maybe 20 minutes, but at least 15 minutes can do a whole lot. But I'll probably have to buy him out, but I have to go into it. So season after next, not this season.
All right. Ab, anything else you'd like to add from what Dre said? Or you have any questions for Dre? Or Dominic, you have any questions for Dre and that Knickerbocker Avenue?
Really? Like, what do you guys really expect from Noah? I mean, is it realistic to think that this is going to just be another, extension of what happened last year? Or do you guys both feel that, you know, that Fizdale, I mean, honestly, you think Fizdale's going to give him a chance and he's going to get any kind of playing time and contribute in any way?
Dominic first and then go to Dre, and then I'll answer. Go ahead, Dominic, and we'll go to Dre.
Well, like I keep saying, it's time for Fizdale to show and prove. If he could, if Noah could give, again, guys, I always go back to, we're not at practice, we're not at workouts, but if he could give us 10 to 12 minutes, and in that 10 to 12 minutes, one, he's spelling Cantor, and the other time, he should be trying to tutor Robinson. He can't tutor Cantor. Cantor's been around. So if there's some good in him, and if Fizdale's what he's, you know, selling, then he should be able to get some of that good out of him. That's all I got as far as, you know, Noah. 10 to 12 minutes, guys. Let's see what Fizdale got.
Hey, Dre, what about you?
I want to see him, but at the same time, I just can't, like, I think the game is just been done. But I really hope he can go ahead and, I'm not saying as a mentor for Mitchell Robinson, but just show him, like, a little ins and outs, because Mitchell Robinson just got a whole lot of time. I think he needs all the help you can go ahead and get, but anything with Noah actually contributing to the team, there's really nothing he can contribute, but I wouldn't mind seeing him just play no more than 10, 15 minutes.
All right. Ab, I think it's more closer to what Dre's saying. I think it's a totally different slate. I think with Noah, him and Hornets had just bumped heads, and he was not going to see the lineup after that practice, and however that's still. I think at best, it's probably no more than like 7 to 8 minutes a game. But knowing Noah, once he does come in, he's definitely going to contribute. Or in the sense of somebody gets hurt, Noah's going to have some playing time until he gets hurt. So hopefully he does not get hurt until we actually decide to ship him away if somebody wants to take him on and get him off the books before he just walks away for whatever. So I think that's kind of the case with him on that.
I think that's my question for now. Anybody got questions for me?
Anybody, Dominic or Dre, you have any questions for Knickerbocker Hat?
No, I'm good, Steve.
Nah.
One question for me, though. I do have a question. Now, do you think you might see the same situation, let's say, if the Knicks happen to make it to the fourth quarter in peace, get through a third quarter, more times than not this season, upcoming season? Do you think, Kansas is going to see more of the fourth quarter because no KP, or do you think Fizdale, consider all things, if another team goes small? It seems like Fizdale's been preaching his lip service of we're going to go big no matter what. So what I'm trying to say is he reiterated Kevin Knox going to be more of a three and Hardaway by default would be a two. So that would assume somebody needs to play a five like Cancer. You think he's going to be at the end of games or do you see another lineup?
Well, I think that personally, that if that's the if he's going with the conventional lineup, you know, Hardaway at the two, Knox at the three, I guess he would put, I'm trying to figure out who's like, you know, who would be the starting four for now. But if you're putting Kanter at five, then you would have to go conventional and stay big and go man to man. I think that would make sense. It would make sense despite the fact that you have, you know, the defensive liability in Kanter, you still have enough long bodies to become a deterrent and to clog up some passing lanes. Unless, you know, of course, the opposition goes down to a one-on-one, and then it's pretty much you know how anything is when you go one-on-one, it's 50-50. If he decides to go small and say he goes, instead of Hardaway at the two, put Hardaway at the three, Knox at the four, and let's say like Moutier or Burke at the one, then I could see Ntilikina being, Noah being the one. If say Noah's playing and he's on the team's good graces and he's healthy, I can see him because he would be, you know, he's still 6'10". He can still get up and down the floor, and he could still be, you know, that's six very good fouls right there. Six hard fouls. Plus, at minimum, you know, seven or eight rebounds and maybe, you know, 8 points, and be somewhat of a defensive floor general and get the team set up. Because really, if you think about it, in any conventional basketball system, the point guard sets up the offense. The center, in all honesty, really does set up the defense. So he would be if he's contributing and playing quality minutes and healthy, I can definitely see Noah playing some prime time minutes.
Yeah, but you know what? There's another point Dom has said. We can't forget the fact that he was a double-double guy, and if you're playing defense, now defense isn't just about blocking shots and deflections and changing shots. I mean, all that is defense. That is the main part of defense. But also securing a rebound goes into the defensive, I guess you could say, basket. And the Knicks have improved their rebounding last year because of him. And like Don's point, Kristaps Porzingis is not this walking double-double type of guy. Kanter is. And if you're going to finish off defensive possessions, you still got to get the rebound. You know, if a shot goes up and you got to get that carom off the rim, get the carom off the rim, you still got to secure the rebound. I mean, somebody's got to rebound, and somebody's got to do the job. I mean, that kind of goes with the package as far as finishing off a defensive possession.
So you're absolutely right, but there have been a number of different times, you know, and especially in game time situations where Kanter is completely boxed out, and then he shows out how he can muscle himself up to secure that rebound. Similar to how Joakim Noah did it, you know, for 10 plus years in Chicago. So it all goes hand in hand. It all depends on, you know, what the matchup is. You know, just like you stated before, when Noah secured Anthony Davis when he got in and was able to, like, kind of slow him down, those kind of things are all contributing factors to defense. I would give the edge to Noah, despite the fact that, you know, Kanter, you know, is taller, a little bit more athletic, a lot younger, and is able to, you know, to be a contributing factor on the offensive end. But you have to give the devil his due. Noah knows about positioning, knows how to box a guy out correctly, knows how to secure rebounds, knows how to you know set up a defense correctly. So, I mean, if you take out the strong suits of both these guys, they would be the perfect five. But unfortunately, you're separating them between two guys. Both of them make over $17 million apiece. And, well, there you have it.
All right, let's go. Let's go to Dominic and then go to Dre. And then let's talk the other teams. Our pick two this week, the Phoenix Suns, Washington Wizards. Dom, what's your thoughts on what Phoenix is doing and also the Washington Wizards?
I'll tell you what, guys. If Phoenix was in the East, they'd be making a run. I know what we say about the young guys, but we're sitting here talking about Noah and Kanta and what they could bring to a team. You look at what the Suns have. They got Chandler. He may not be the Chandler he once was, but he's another rah-rah, boom-bye, keep people's heads in the game. They picked up Ariza. They got Brandon Knight. So while they have a team full of young studs, they still got some quality players. If they was in the East, guys, it would be interesting. Unfortunately, they're in the West, but I think they're going to do a little better than people are thinking they're going to do. I'm skimming over their roster, and damn, it seems like the average age taking out Chandler and maybe Ariza, they're like 24, 25 years old on an average age. They got a great upside. The thing is, with the NBA, can they keep him? You know, when these contracts run out, you know, where are they going to go? But they have a very good nucleus and a very young nucleus. As far as the Wizards, guys, they are who they are. You know, again, we went over this last week with Portland. Here's a team, like Toronto was for years, geared around their two guards. And how's that worked out so far? They normally have a good regular season, but I don't see, you know, what they really added. You know, Jeff Green, Dwight Howard, you know, they added a couple of pieces, but which takes me back to the Knicks again, guys. If things just fall slightly in a good direction for the Knicks, I'll give you Toronto, Boston, the Sixers, maybe Washington or Milwaukee. The rest of that league, the rest of that East Coast is still up for grabs, guys. And you really can't put a lot of stock in the Wizards. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm just going by what they've been doing and what they always seem to do. You know, again, the Raptors, Portland, teams that normally have good regular seasons, geared around their two guards. And then at the end of the day, when they get in the playoffs, and you're playing the same team every other night, slowly but surely those wheels start to fall off. Give Toronto credit. They said enough is enough. They've seen enough. So I'll tell you what, guys. If Phoenix was in the East, I'd put them neck and neck with the Wizards. Matter of fact, with the mixture of veterans and youth, they got something that's going to be pretty good for a few years, Steve.
Mm-hmm. All right. Hey, Jerry, what's your thoughts, man, on the Phoenix Suns and the Washington Wizards? And we'll go to Avin and get my thoughts after that.
I think you could have some money with the Suns. And if there was an East, I think with me, I would say they were a top 5 or 6 team easy if they was in the East. And in terms of keeping them together, I think that would only be a problem going into the, I think, their third or fourth year, because one, I think you would have been had Devin Booker secure, and then you have real core that make a difference, DeAndre and Mikal Bridges, both on the Bucks contract for the next 3 to 4 years. So that's really going to be looking forward to seeing the Wizards. Wizards, I really don't know exactly how to do with them because it's like they're still like remaining contention, but at the same time, you don't know. You already know it's gonna be like a first round second. So with them, I think it'd be kind of just blow it up eventually, and I think this is probably something that Bradley do.
All right. Hey,
Ab,
what's your thoughts on those two teams?
Phoenix Suns, to me, are they got a lot more exciting. They added a lot of young pieces. But I wouldn't go as same thing with Dom says. It's like that if they would be in the Eastern Conference, that you know that they'd be like you know top seed. I think they would be. They would definitely make the playoffs. I have them kind of like on the same level as what, you know, the Sixers used to be a couple years ago before they made the big push this past season. And they're going to be exciting to watch. Unfortunately, they're in the Western Conference, and they're going to have to deal with, you know, the heavyweights there at least three or four times, a year. And, it's just the luck of the draw. The Wizards, I still think that this is a team that, needs to be blown up. It's still on the same list as mine of teams that need to be blown up and restarted, rebuilt. They haven't done anything different to me. They're gonna have. I see them being maybe a playoff team, maybe barely an eighth team. This is the sad thing about the Washington Wizards is that they could be as good as number one, and they can be as worse as number, 10. They can really have one of those, any other of those seasons, and it seems to happen on flip-flopping years. Even number years, they make the playoffs. Odd number years, they're horrible. They're devastated by injury, all these other things happening. I just think that it's about time that, the management and the ownership really to evaluate this team and make adjustments to it accordingly. I mean, if you want to keep John Wall and build around him, then do so. Bradley Beal, same thing. But they need to be more than just those two guys. And because they've been those two guys for, the last 5 or 6 years, and it hasn't panned out exactly how they wanted to. A couple other teams I think they do the same thing, the Memphis Grizzlies, they're the same way. They need to, kind of like blow it up and restart. But they refuse to. And, same thing with, and I think Portland is itching towards that same direction as I said it before, last week. But I think Phoenix is going to be fun. They're probably going to do pretty well against most Eastern Conference teams on any given night. And but unfortunately, they're in the Western Conference, so it's going to be a hell for them to try to just get into the conversation, behind the Warriors, the Rockets, the Spurs, and now the Lakers. So and of course Utah. I think those are shoo-ins for the playoffs next season. So the bottom three teams in the West is probably up for grabs in a sense. The Eastern Conference, the Wizards will make it, but I don't see anything happen for them.
Yeah, I'll start with the Wizards. I think I have to take a lot of my thunder, man. I thought we said it last year. Oh, I definitely said it last year, and I remember speaking with Chris on air, and I think some of you guys, we were all in agreement. They had to blow that up after this season, after losing in the first round. So either keep Wall or keep Bill. If I had to say to pick one, probably, Bradley Beal played pretty good, pretty well, when John Wall was injured for a lot of that season, man. So, you could go either or. You saw what Bradley Beal could do without John Wall. Build around him, get other pieces around those guys. I don't think Dwight Howard is a significant upgrade from Marcin Gortat, who went to L.A. Adding Jeff Green behind Markieff Morris is a nice, decent piece. But you really don't know what you're going to get out of Otto Porter. I like Kelly Oubre's game. He's a nice guy coming off the bench. But Otto Porter, he's actually an excellent three-point shooter. He was last year, the last couple of years. But when it was time for the playoffs to make big shots, man, he just went AWOL. He just went wouldn't be found, man. And I think Ernie Grunwald is running the Wizards. And Scott Brooks, this is, to me, is not really the master head coach everybody thinks he is. We saw him kind of get exposed in Oklahoma City and kind of that same thing last year in the playoffs versus Toronto. So, but on this, on my thoughts on Phoenix, I'm not really, you know, I watched DeAndre Ayton's game in college at Arizona, and I saw a little bit of him in the summer league, but more so in college. I think he's a little bit overrated, to be real bad. I'm not as high on him as him being the number one pick. I could be wrong, but I just don't see it, man. I mean, as far as being a bona fide number one pick that he needed to go number one, I thought there was a, like, I could name a couple of guys who I thought are better players than him in the draft. And then Chandler, Dominic mentioned, as far as Tyson Chandler, he's going to be backing him up and, you know, grooming him and such and such. I thought Trevor Ariza going to the Phoenix Suns was kind of surprising for $15 million. But they got nice pieces at small forward. And you could go small, you could go big, because they got quality guys. You got Mikal Bridges, and you got him in the trade from the Sixers. And then of course, T.J. Warren is a pretty good player as well. I'm surprised they don't have the quality of depth at behind point guard, because Brandon Knight was hurt a lot last year. And then Devin Booker is kind of like, you know, they gave him a lot of money just like, what, 3 weeks ago. They gave him, signed him to a huge extension. But I agree with all you guys' points, man. I don't think they're making it an 8-8 seed in the Western Conference, not at all. But let's wrap up, man. Final thoughts from Dre real quick, and then Dominic. Dre, final thoughts from you, and then we go to Dominic.
Okay, final thoughts.
Yes.
It's just power. They're going to be a powerhouse within 2 years. The Knicks just, oh, they just play their cards with the young guys this time. And that's pretty much it.
Little Dre to the Rack on Instagram. Thank you very much, man. Talking Knicks, Enos Kanter, and of course, Jakeem Noah as well. Dominic, your final thoughts.
I'm just hoping it's going to be a good year. We show and prove, we get better, possibly make the playoffs, teach these young guys what it's like to win, and let's take it from there. It should be fun. I'll say that. It should be fun this year.
Donardo DP on Twitter and Instagram, thank you very much. And add your final thoughts and how you can be found on social media, and let everybody know what's going on with you guys and at OmniFan if you want to include that.
Well, you can find me at Knickerbocker on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. OmniFan is where your loyalty reigns supreme. It's a brand new company that would offer you rewards points for you being, for your fandom, whether it's the Knicks. Right now, it's mostly the Knicks. So, and Knickerbocker has on front. They got great T-shirt designs. I'm wearing, you know, my signature shirt right now, and there's a couple other designs coming down the pipe by yours truly. But my final thought is, it's not even Knicks related. It's going to be like the way we started the show. Sonny Gray, go kill yourself.
He's going to the pen. He's going to
the you know, at this point, it probably wouldn't hurt. I mean, you know, now with Hap being there, and we're going to that series, you know, with the Red Sox soon, it would be beneficial. But, I mean, the Knicks, you know, as we talk about every week, they have a lot of, you know, they have a lot of what ifs, and it's all based on what Fizdale actually puts together and what these players and how these players react to him. But we'll be here to analyze it, dissect it, question it, judge it, and, you know, and criticize whenever it seems possible. And of course, if those listening, if you hear something that we, any one of us say, whether it's something that you agree or disagree, you want to debate it, you want to comment on it, hey, you know where to find us. You got our Twitter handles, and if not, you can call us, 929-477-4171. Every Wednesday night, we're here. We're not running from anybody. We'll debate it with you no matter what it is. It's all friendly, you know, fun banter between fans, because this is the forum for the fans. Nick Bacchanal signing out. Sangre Azul, blue all day, bleed blue every day.
Hey, Av, I got a question for you. What Nick will you want to do next week? I'll let you pick. Which Nick you want to tackle next week?
Which Nick do I want to tackle next?
Yeah.
I would say Ron Baker, but there's not very much to go with. Let's talk about Tim Hardaway Jr. next week.
Sure, why not? Hardaway Jr., THJR number 3. All right, for Dominic and Andre, and of course, Knickerbocker Avenue, Sangre Azul, we'll talk to Tim Hardaway Jr., and two teams next week from the West and the East. Bleed Blue.
Bleed Blue, can you Bleed dig blue? It? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Bleep blue, 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 bleep blue.